Wake the neighbors and phone the kids. It's about time for WSLM's newest show. Get ready for Kentuckiana Sports Talk, the biggest and only local sports talk show in Kentuckiana. Focusing on Southern Indiana and Kentucky high school sports, regional college sports, and national sports news. If you want to talk to the KST guys, George Browning and Blair Thompson, call the KST Talk Line at 812-883-3401. Keep your comments brief and to the point, or Becky will throw a flag and take you out of the game. And now we go into Studio A inside the Pinewood Studios of WSLM for Kentuckiana Sports Talk with George and Blair.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Get ready for Kentuckiana Sports Talk.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Kentuckiana Sports Talk. I'm Blair Thompson and I am joined tonight with Derek Early. George is gone this evening. He is officiating a funeral. So, Derek, welcome to the step in. A little pinch hit action tonight.
Went to the bullpen.
brought in the relief pitcher tonight for the talk show. So we're gonna bring you lots to talk about. First week in high school football this week gets kicked off, and we're excited about that. We're gonna talk about Tiger making his big run in the PGA. We'll talk a little bit about Tony Stewart's big announcement, and hopefully we'll get some people to call in and give us their picks for the first week of IHSAA action. And then we have an interview with Brownstown head football coach Reed May, which George did earlier this week, and we're excited about having Coach May take his time out and to give us a little interview. So let's get this thing started. We got a lot to talk about and not a lot of time to do it in. So, Derek, tell us what your big weekend news was.
I was ready to let you drive the ship here for a little bit. But, my main story from the week and my big topic, my takeaway, kept me on the couch for the majority of the day on Saturday and just about all day on Sunday. That may or may not also been a personal choice that I made on my own. But
too hot outside.
Kept me fully invested in the TV for the majority of the weekend. And you alluded to it in the opening there. Tiger Woods made and
comeback Tiger.
Just it brought back memories of Tiger of old. Something we haven't seen Tiger do in a long time, which was, you know, compete, but not only compete, but do that at a high level and to maintain the level of play that he did over the course of 4 days and to put together the tournament that he did. And then the run that he made on Sunday when it looked like, you know, starting the day six shots back, you don't think, you know, it's not the 2000 Tiger. Not sure if he's going to be able to make a run, especially being six shots back out of the gate. But what he was able to do on Sunday just had me hooked, and it felt like old Tiger, and it kind of feels like he may be back. I hate that this is the last major for the year.
Right.
You know, it's kind of one of those deals where if you're playing that well, I wish the Masters was next week.
I don't think Phil wants to, you know, him and Phil are supposed to play this big $10 million playoff. I'm not sure Phil wants to tackle this one.
Definitely not if it's his own money. I know that. Not right now.
You know, one of the things I thought about when I was watching, it was really cool because I had to go – to Braylon's baseball practice, and all the dads had their phones and they were watching, you know, hey, Tiger's one stroke back, or hey, you know, so we were all kind of huddled together watching this guy's phone instead of watching the kids out. I won't tell Braylon that, but we were kind of, you know, we were kind of watching to see if Tiger was going to make a run. And, you know, I have yet to have anybody cheer for me in second place like they do Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody's excited that he got second. You know,
yeah, I heard a really good one today. It said the only two people in the world that were not pulling for Tiger to win were Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka and Adam Scott were the only two people there that did not want to see Tiger Woods win that tournament, and it was awesome to see.
Yeah, and it was interesting because I read an article today about Koepka, and it was talking about how he kept his calm, and it was basically saying they were comparing him Tiger to Jack Nicklaus.
Right.
And he was the old hand now, and Koepka, who's won his, third major, right?
He's won three out of his last seven majors.
And he's 28.
He's young, dude. 20, yeah.
Something
young
like
dude.
That. And maybe even younger. I don't know. And he I think that he didn't choke under pressure. And that's the thing that Tiger, had for a long time was he had that, Tiger's coming at you and you better hit every single shot. Great. And, a lot of people are talking about Tiger, and I think it's great. And obviously we were all excited about watching it. But the fact that this kid could keep his calm, he was talking about every time Tiger hit a putt, it just rotated all the way down the galley, and he said that, it was just roar after roar after roar, and he's trying to swing his golf club,
yeah.
And, no one there wanted him to win, but
right.
But him and his caddy, and so I think that, speaks for itself to be able to have that kind of calmness at such a young age to go ahead and knock Tiger off.
Yeah, Justin Thomas was talking, there was a quote he had today, they interviewed him, of course, and, local kid there from Goshen, Kentucky, and they said, what's it like out there? And he goes, there's absolutely no roar in golf like a Tiger roar, and you can hear the difference. And so that resonates with the players. And like you said, for Koepka to be able to maintain his composure and to go out there each hole, hit the shot he needed to hit, it speaks a lot to him.
Right.
And his talent. Like you said, a lot of the guys, they may not have that fear of Tiger like the guys in the early to mid-2000s did, but a lot of that came with injury,
right?
And Tiger going through two or three swing changes and just not having trust in his swing. And it looks
right.
like right now he's got that trust
in the back.
He took a 9-iron nearly off the cart path,
right.
And was able to hook it 150 yards onto the green.
I hook a lot of shots, but not on purpose.
Mine
go flying. There's a lot out in the field there on hole number 7.
A lot of undesigned hook shots,
yeah.
in the Blair Thompson golf game.
Maybe a few on the racetrack too, right? So yeah, but that was awesome. But it's good for golf, man. It's great for, and that's what Koepka said. He said, listen, my generation wouldn't even be playing golf if it wasn't for Tiger Woods. He said Tiger Woods made golf cool for us, and I think that's awesome that he has that ability.
It changes everything. I read this today. It said the ratings for this tournament were up almost 70%. And it was the PGA's highest rating in nearly a decade.
Wow.
And it's all because the dude was wearing, because Tiger's there, it's got a Sunday red on, he's in contention. So people pay attention.
Well, another interesting tidbit that came out of the weekend was one of my favorite drivers of all time, Tony Stewart, back in the news. And Tony Stewart has made it clear that he wants to come back and race in next year's Indianapolis 500. Another local guy.
Old Smokey. Put him in
the
car.
I mentioned it earlier before we went on air. He may have to go on a diet before he can get back in his Indy car, but that's why I missed out on my 500 run. It couldn't get me in a car. But
a lot of aerodynamics there.
Yeah, one of the things he said, though, has got people in a little uproar. I love it because I personally love it because it's Tony being Tony, and Tony's a guy that's going to shoot you straight. He's not politically correct all the time. And it's everything that people say is wrong with NASCAR today is that we've got these cookie-cutter drivers who aren't, are afraid to say what they feel. And he came out and made a statement that if he's going to go back and race, he doesn't want to be a sideshow like Danica Patrick. So got people in a little uproar. And, Danica was fast. I mean, it wasn't like she was last, but he made a few people upset with him. But one of the things that I read today is that he wanted to run for Penske. But Penske, with the motors and Tony's Ford sponsorship that he has with NASCAR, he's not going to be able to run for Penske. But it looks like maybe Andretti Autosports is going to pick him up, which is awesome. That's another, he don't want a team. He wants a team that he has a chance to win. So that's another
feather in Tony's cap if he's able to jump on with that team and with their equipment and what they've got available. That's a win-win for him.
Yeah, it's definitely a team that can put you in the front. So
yeah,
I'm excited about it. I remember the last time he ran the double where he did the Coca-Cola 600 and the Indianapolis 500, same day, 1,100 miles. he was the 1997 IRL champ. So, and I love it because this is the race he wants to win. And as a kid, it's what he dreamed of winning, and he may have another shot to do it. And I'll tell you what, if Tony Stewart's in an Indy car in May, they're going to sell a lot of tickets.
absolutely. He's a big draw, and you know, we've had a number of Indiana guys get in cars for the Indy 500, and to have him do it one more time and to put himself in a position with a team like that where he can, where he has a chance to win, I think, you know, anytime Tony Stewart's behind the wheel of a car, I think he's got, you know, at least a gambler's chance.
Right.
So that'll be interesting to see. Hopefully it works out.
Yeah, for sure. What else you got over the weekend?
Well, to kind of piggyback off of yours, there was a NASCAR race this weekend. The Monster Energy Cup Series went to Michigan, and Kevin Harvick came away with the win. And I believe Greg said right before we started, everybody gets a free Bloomin' Onion today.
Yeah,
so if you're still out and about, you've got about 2 hours left to hop in there and get one.
Feel free to bring us one if you'd like.
Yeah, if you want to drop one by, that would not be frowned upon. But Kevin Harvick wins the race at Michigan, the Michigan 400. And currently standing, Kyle Busch is still your points leader. He's about 60 points clear of second place. And they're looking at 3 races left before the chase starts. And that last race happens to be at the Brickyard in Indy. So
right, yeah. So it's going to be a huge night. It's going to be the whole weekend, you know. And one of the things that they're doing this year at Indianapolis, and they have a quarter-mile dirt track they're bringing in for the USAC midgets. And they have almost they had almost 80 cars signed up to run that race. And so they're going to do that on, I think it's the first and the second or third and fourth of the night. And it's Thursday night. And then they're going to have that race. And then WSLM is going to be giving away tickets. So we'll have tickets to the Brickyard.
Somebody's
and the
Xfinity
race. So we'll have those on our show. And Becky and Greg will have them during the week to give away. So we're excited about that as well. So yeah, NASCAR heating up. So, you know, that's always a big race because it's in Michigan. So you have all the car builders there in Detroit, and that's you want to show out for for those guys. So big job, and you know, Kevin Harvick's been up there for a long time, and he's a good guy. So good for Kevin to win that. And you know, we had a race. We had a local kid win his first race here in Salem over the weekend. Baden Stewart, senior at West Washington, really drove the wheels off his car at the Speedway and won in dramatic fashion. And he had interesting last couple laps. Had a car kind of wait on him there at the end of the race to try to
put
him
in the
wall. And he was able to hold on and win that race. So, you know, big congratulations to Baden Stewart and the Stewart Automotive guys that had that car. It was awesome to see a young driver from the Washington County area pull off a victory.
Absolutely.
So good night for sure. A couple other things we'll run through real quick. Thursday night, the Bengals, my Bengals.
Your guys.
We're big on preseason because we may not win too many during the regular season, you know. So we got a huge, huge preseason win.
Bengals get up for the preseason.
Yeah, over the Bears, you know. Bears fan. A lot of Bears fans in Washington County. So Bengals, you know, put the Bears away. 30-27. Andy Dalton, 6-for-8 for 103 yards and 2 TDs.
Your guy, the rifle.
I mean, he completed 6 passes for 2 TDs. That's a pretty good day, right?
And what'd you say? How many yards?
103.
That's pretty good average.
Yeah, right. So Colts 19, Seahawks 17. Colts get their first preseason win. Maybe one of, you know, Andrew Luck's back, 6-9. So I know you're a Colts guy. So
yep,
both of our teams.
Anytime
preseason
the Colts can
wins.
Get a win, it's a good day. You know, we used to be the complete opposite of the Bengals in the preseason. We used to go 0-for
right.
in the preseason. So, you know, getting a win out of the gate and seeing Luck come out, and I think just seeing the dude in pads and a uniform and on the field is encouraging in a lot of ways for Colts fans and, you know, the NFL in general. He's good for the brand, and the league is better whenever your best players are out there. And, you know, to see the Colts get a win, and Luck's playing, the shoulder's healthy, it's holding up. So hopefully it's good things for the Colts this season.
You know, I'd like to know, the last time the Bengals and Colts both won a game on the same day. You know,
that's a good point.
That probably doesn't happen very often, so we're pretty excited about that.
Does, that's a fluke if it does.
Well, hey, you never know. It could be the year, right?
It's
the
year.
The year of the Bengals and the Colts. We'll see. Baseball news: Red Sox coming off the Boston massacre, they called it, of the Yankees over the weekend. 9.5 games up in the East. Really, possibly,
they may be coasting at this point.
Possibly the best Boston team they've had in a long time. Cleveland Indians 12 up in the Central. Astros 2.5 up in the West. So don't forget the Astros, the reigning champions. On the other side, in the NL side, Braves half a game up on the Phillies in the East. Close race coming down here on the stretch. The Cubs, your team, three games up in the Central.
Go Cubs, go.
Only three games up in the Central. Only 16 games and a half up against the Reds. We won't mention that. And then in the West, the D-backs, the surprise team, the Diamondbacks, one game up on the Dodgers.
Surprise team in the baseball right now, the Diamondbacks there.
Yeah, you know, the Dodgers have spent a ton of money for their team. Yeah. And they're still
– And just brought in a stud, too.
Right, they're a game out. And then the Rockies, another surprise team, small market team, small salary team.
Right.
And they're a game and a half back from the Diamondbacks. So all three of those teams could pull it out in the West, and it's exciting stuff going on as baseball comes to a close. So we're really, you know.
That AL race will get real interesting toward the end of the year, especially if the matchups work out to where the Yankees and Red Sox get to meet in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, it looks like the Yankees are probably going to win the wild card, and if they do, then that'll be an interesting evening. And, you know, a lot of the Yankees people are pulling for Aaron Boone to get out of being a manager. They don't think he's tough enough, you know. So they thought their last manager was too hard on his guys, and now this guy's not hard enough. So
my question would be, how tough do you have to be as a manager when in the heart of your lineup you've got Aaron Judge and you've got Stanton
right
in your line? I mean, how hard do you really have to be as a manager? Just go out there and hit the ball, guys.
Yeah, I mean, just, yeah. But, you know, when you got a guy like Judge who's just massive, I mean, it's a good day for sure.
Stanton had, just this last week, the fastest recorded home run exiting the ballpark in the history of the StatCast technology. And it was leaving the ballpark at 127 miles an hour.
Wow.
Off the bat. So,
I feel like you could probably do that in the batting cage. You know, we could get you in the batting cage and be ready to roll.
I'm not sure I could do that with a golf club or a baseball bat and a golf club.
Well, I feel like Judge sometimes looks like that. You know, Little League World Series is going on right now. And I feel like Judge feels like that one kid that's always in the World Series that's like 2 feet taller than everybody else.
The one
you know?
That you're checking his birth certificate.
Yeah, they
want to
know his birth certificate. You probably usually always play in first base. You know, he's always playing first base, and he want to know what's going on with him. So, so that's the week in review, basically for sports. And did you have anything else before we go to this interview with Coach May?
No, let's do it.
All right,
let's talk to Coach.
So we're gonna send out now to this interview that George did with Brownstown Central head football coach Reed May.
Welcome to Kentuckiana Sports Talk, your sports authority in Washington County and Southern Indiana. We've been interviewing Mid-Southern Conference head coaches as we head into the 2018 football season. We've brought you Cordon Central head coach Aaron Humphrey and Silver Creek head coach John Dablo. And this week we got a special guest with us, Brownstown Central head football coach Reed May, who's been at Brownstown for a little over 2.5 decades now, and he certainly has a lot of experience. So we welcome Coach May into the Pinewood studio, and we're going to talk about who he lost and who he has coming back, and just exciting times for Brownstown Central football. They have a new press box. They're installing the field turf this year. He's going to finish that up here in the next week or two, so they'll be ready to go for the season. So, sit back and listen to my interview with Coach May. I hate to look back at last year, but just talk a little bit about what you lost. You know, you have some talented players every year that you have to replace. Who's some of those key guys that you're going to replace going into this year?
Well, the biggest one's a quarterback. You know, Gus Hogan was a quarterback, and anytime you've got to replace your quarterback, it's always the unknown. So he started quarterback, and he started at defensive back, and then we lost a pretty good lineman, Lyndon Underwood, who started both ways for us, and he is now playing at Franklin College. And then we had a guy named Colton Ritz, who is a heck of an athlete. He plays slot defensive back also, but he went to state last year in the pole vault, and now he's pole vaulting at Indiana Wesleyan or something like that. So, you know, those are three good kids we lost. We got a kid named Noah Reynolds, who's also going to go play at Hanover. So Noah played basically defensive end for us. So we lost some quality guys. But, you know, you do that every year. And anytime you have some success, you're going to lose some quality guys every year. And then hopefully you can reload and go again.
Well, speaking of that, who's some guys that you're expecting to step up for you this year and lead you guys into 2018?
Well, we always count on our seniors. I mean, I guess that's the key is, you know, you have to have senior leadership. We have 11 seniors that we're hopefully all of them can, you know, lead in some way or another, either vocally or just by their, you know, work ethic and so forth. So, you know, our middle linebacker, Luke Shelton, returns, and he started middle linebacker. He also plays some offensive line. We have one of our slots and defensive backs, Caleb Bollinger, that he played well for us last year. You know, we have Robbie Brandeman, who plays defensive end and either tight end or offensive line for us. And Seth Borden, who started wide out in DB, got hurt prior to the Salem game, which kind of, well, he hurt maybe during the Salem game, which kind of hurt us against a receiver. You know, Brashenberg, we are our best DB, was hurt, so that hurt us quite a bit. So, you know, those are the main guys. We had some other guys that were hoping to step up, but those guys played quite a bit last year. And, you know, we're at Matt Bell. I forgot about Matt. Matt starts to pull back and outside linebacker for us. So, you know, those guys are the ones that probably played quite a bit last year that were hoping to lead us this year.
Tell me a little bit about your summer. Did you have a busy summer? Were you guys working in 7-on-7s, doing some 11-on-11 type stuff?
Yeah, we don't do a lot of 11-on-11 except for team camp. We go 3 days a week. We lift and have our open field. And then last week of June, prior to the moratorium, we went to team camp at Hanover College this year, which is new for us. But we were able to go at the camp was Evansville Memorial, the 3A state champ, Southridge, the 2A state champ, Evansville Wright, which obviously is a great football program at Evansville, Silver Creek, and ourselves. So we were able, those 3 days, to go quite a bit 11-on-11, 7-on-7 against some really good opponents. So that's kind of put us an idea of where we're at. And then we also had a 7-on-7 at Bedford. It was Bedford, Franklin, and us that did a 7-on-7. So, you know, it's a productive summer. We got better, and that's what we want to do. And, you know, you have always some unknown people, so it's always good to see them. And, you know, we had our red-black scrimmage, which kind of inter-squad scrimmage. And then we played Jennings Friday in our scrimmage. And then we'll see where we're at come Corden.
I saw a picture on Twitter of that field. That's a beautiful thing for your community, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know, last year we redid the press box. You know, I mean, our stadium press box were both built in 1965, so obviously we needed some things done. And last year we was fortunate enough to get a new press box, a new stadium, which is state-of-the-art. And then our community backed us for a new turf, so we're not only getting a new turf, we're getting a new 8-lane track, which, you know, we haven't been able to host, you know, sectionals or conference or big meets because we had a 6-lane track. So not only are the football fields going to be nice, but we're going to get an 8-lane track, and, you know, we're getting a new parking lot. We're getting over the part of my practice field is becoming a parking lot since we did the turf now. So you're just a lot of, you know, it's a heck of a lot of construction been going on all summer and now even. So, you know, by next football season, a year from now, everything will be done, completed. And right now we just got to do with what best we can. You know, we had to move the scrimmage to Jennings County because their turf's not done yet. But, you know, it should be done by our first home game. So, you know, we're looking forward to getting on the turf and practicing on the turf.
You know, a lot of people go back and forth about the field turf and the expense. From your perspective as a coach, what are the advantages of having that? Because I know some people are against it, but I've heard nothing but really positive things.
Well, it's not only positive for football. I mean, obviously, we have our practice field at Dorman, but, you know, where it really was evident for us, we played Southridge in the sectional championship 2 years ago on their turf. Then Memorial came up here and played on our field, which it probably helped us in the long run to win the game, but our field was just terrible. And, you know, it's kind of an embarrassment for our community and so forth that they had to come up here and play on it. And then we went to Lawrenceburg and played our nice turf. So, you know, that kind of helped us see more help and us get the turf. To me, the benefits is not only, you know, your practicing, but also other sports can use it, you know, especially like in the spring when, you know, the baseball and softball teams are getting, or the fields are soaked and so forth. They can go out on the turf and, you know, pick ground balls, hit fly balls, and do the same kind of practice you would on your normal field, but they can use the turf. The band can use the turf. Obviously, we don't have soccer, but the soccer team, you know, they can use it, PE classes. And just, you know, we have our youth program. You know, our game field was used not only by us, but it was used by our 56er program, our middle school program. So by the end of the year, our field was just terrible. So now you get more people can use it that way. And I think there's just a lot of other advantages throughout the community that, you know, will be used for.
I know some, it used to be a road game people weren't looking forward to, and probably from a game perspective, they still won't, but it's nice to play on that sort of field, so it's great for the conference to have that kind of field to play on.
It'll be interesting how many schools after us will get turf now. It happens every place. You know, one school gets it in the conference, all the other schools want to get it in the conference. So hopefully a bunch of them get the conference, because obviously our kids, after playing at Gibson Southern and South Ridge and Lawrenceburg, it's just a nice place for the kids, you know, something for the kids, the community, and so forth. So, it's one of those things that we're hoping that, you know, when Seymour got it, that really probably helped us immensely, because it's our tribal, you know, close communities and so forth. So, yeah, it'd be interesting after this year how many other schools in the conference start saying, hey, we need to get that too. So, yeah, we'll see.
Absolutely. Now, back to you guys. I moved here in 2001, Coach, and really, since then, Brownstown football has been really the bar. Now, I know you guys didn't win conference last year, but for the most part, you've been in the thick of it every year. How does Brownstown maintain that kind of consistency where you're in the hunt every year? What separates your program from programs that take one of those years or 2 years to kind of rebuild? Well, how do you all do it every year?
I think one, staff. You know, this is my 26th year here, so obviously me and my staff has been here for a long, long time. Not only us, but our middle school staff and our youth program staff have been together for quite a while. We got great kids. You know, the kids buy into the program. You know, we have advanced weight class, and all the football players are in the weight class all 4 years of high school, so they're, you know, getting bigger, faster, stronger. We have a good middle school weightlifting program that basically I run that too. So, you know, the kids we have are hard-working blue-collar kids. I have no problem with people missing practice. I have no problem with summer attendance. I probably had 95% attendance throughout the summer of the kids on the team. Very few kids miss anything. And we're also, we stress multi-sports. We're big on that. We want our kids to play basketball. We want our kids to play baseball. We want our kids to run track. You know, I'm a firm believer. I do not want a kid to concentrate on one sport. So, the longevity of the staff, the weight program, just our community in general, their views on sports, period. I think all those things tie into it and, help us be successful all these years. But, it's a combination of a lot of different factors. It can't be one. But, my staff's been together for quite a while, so that helps immensely, too. So, it's just a combination of a lot of different things.
When you think about the conference race this year, obviously you guys are in the thick of it. But who else do you think, when you look out there and kind of think about who's got what coming back, who do you think will be in the race this year to win a conference title?
It's really hard telling right now. I really haven't heard much chatter about anyone in particular. I know, Salem has a good sophomore quarterback. I know North Harrison, they're well coached. They've been strong for quite a few years. I know Charlestown is a really good running back. And a Luke's kid, Silver Creek, they're the biggest school in the conference, are really dominating all sports right now. So obviously they're got to be a factor. Cordon, the new coach last year, it's really hard telling. I think they're still unknown, and I kind of go in the year every year thinking that. We obviously watched a lot of film all winter and got scouting reports, but you get all kinds of different scenarios that could happen injury wise, move ins, things like that. So, obviously I think, if you had to pick somebody, North Harrison has won it, two of the last 3 years, so obviously they're going to be a big factor. Like you said, we're in contention, but, Salem's, RJ's doing a great job, Jason does a great job, Humphrey's a new coach there, Eastern, he's at 2 or 3 years, so I think it's just kind of unknown right now.
What keeps your fire burning, Coach, after all these years to still, I know it's kind of in the blood, but at the same time, it takes a lot of energy to do year in and year out. So what keeps you going?
Well, it helps having the same staff. We're kind of, this is what we do. So that helps. But, Yeah, again, I'm 62 years old, but I have no hobbies. You know, I don't hunt. I don't fish. I don't golf. This is my hobby. My daughter. I got three daughters. One a sophomore. One's a seventh grader. And one's a first grader. And my sophomore just asked me, Dave, what's your hobbies? And I said, I really don't have any hobbies. So this kind of coaching is my hobby. I just being around the kids, I think the main thing is where I tell these kids, my job is to develop you into fine young men, and there's a lot of different ways to do that. And, football is one of them. It teaches a lot of life. I think football is the hardest sport that you practice. I mean, it's harder than basketball, harder than baseball. So, there's a lot of tough, life lessons learned through football practice and the hard knocks of practice and, game nights and so forth. So I think, just the thrill of watching young men develop from freshman year to senior year and, watching a teenage year develop, a lot of times I like the process of the whole off season kind of excites me just as well as the season, watching kids get better. So I think a combination of those things.
You got a scrimmage this Friday, and then the lights get brighter the following Friday. Are you excited about that, or you wish you had a little more time before the real thing starts?
No, I'm ready for the games. I mean, the big thing, we use the season. We like to win every game. The main thing is to be ready for sectional, and that's our kind of our goal is, we want to be the best team possible come sectional time. And I always tell the kids, who knows how the season's going to progress. You're going to have some adversity, you're going to have some injuries, but the main thing is come sectional time, we want to be the best football team we possibly can. And the older I get, the more we kind of look into it that way. Of course we'd like to win every game, but the main thing is come sectional time, we want to be the best football team we can and make the deepest run we can in the tournament. And obviously our goal is, like every team goal should be, is win the state title. But 3A is a bear. 3A, you've got a lot of good parochial schools, a lot of good public schools, and it'd be nice to go back to 2A where we used to be. But 3A is a bear, so we'll do the best we can. But that's one thing. 3A is probably one of the toughest classes of all the classes, just because of the Memorials, the Fort Winglers, the Chatars above us. I mean, it's tough. So we'll see what happens. So.
Well, and those are teams outside your sectional. Your sectional's even gotten tougher these days.
Lawrenceburg and North Harrison, that's a good base field. We've got a great team this year. So, our Salem, Gordon, North Harrison, it's our sectional stuff. So, we're close to being back to 2A. So, maybe we'll end up here soon. So, who knows?
All right, Coach. Well, thanks for your time, and good luck this year. We'll be seeing you when you play our local teams, and we'll be in touch with you.
That sounds great. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, Jordan, fire it in there.
This is This Date in Reds Baseball, brought to you by Cincinnati USA Regional Tourism Network.
In the era of the Big Red Machine, the Reds had only one 20-game winner, and that was Jim Merritt in 1970. And on this August 13th, Merritt had his best game of the year, beating the Mets 6-1 at Riverfront. He gave up just 5 hits and struck out 13 without walking a batter. Merritt struck out 12 of the first 18 hitters he faced. Merritt was pitching so well that year, he won his 20th game on August 26th, and he figured to have a shot at winning 25. But he developed a sore arm and didn't win another game that year, and saw only brief action in the postseason. But Jim Merritt was the ace of the staff in 1970 with his 20 wins, and he had one of his best games this August 13th, 1970, this date in Reds baseball.
This date in Reds baseball with team historian Greg Rhodes is brought to you by CincinnatiUSA.com, the official travel guide of Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky. CincinnatiUSA.com.
I love living. I think that's infectious. It's something that you can't fake. Greatness is not this wonderful, elusive feature that only the special among us will ever taste. It's something that truly exists in all of us. It's very simple. This is what I believe, and I'm willing to die for it.
The separation of talent and skill is one of the greatest misunderstood concepts for people who are trying to excel, who have dreams, that want to do things. Talent you have naturally. Skill is only developed by hours and hours and hours of beating on your craft. Sickening work ethic. While the other guy's sleeping, I'm working. While the other guy's eating, I'm working. I want my life, I want my work, my family, I want it to mean something. If you are not making someone else's life better, then you're wasting your time. The first step.
Taking time to do that interview with George during the week, and you know, one of the things that when you talk Mid-Southern Conference football, you got to talk about Coach Reed May. And you know, I was here his first year. I was a player his first year when he got to Brownstown in 1994, and we won by 4 that game, and then they beat us the next year by 2. And then it was all she wrote until Matt Hudson runs one back 102 yards to break the streak. So when you're talking to Mid-Southern Conference, you know, that's a team to beat. That's who we all want to be, and hopefully we get a chance to play well with them this year over at Brownstown.
Yeah, it seems like they dominate the conference, and then, you know, once every 4 or 5 years they let somebody else take a little bit of the crown for a second. But they definitely set the bar for the conference. Do want to say, you know, basketball practice is kind of hard. Coach May kind of went in on basketball there for a second. I have no doubt football practice is difficult. I bet I know it's a grind, but you know, we work in the basketball gym too.
We
work
degrees,
on the court.
You get the 72 degrees out there, and it's a rough setting inside that.
It's climate controlled, but it's all right.
Yeah, I get you. Hey, he did mention their turf they got, and if you get a chance to get over there and see that, I know that's been a hot topic in Washington County, but if you get a chance to see what it was like to what it is now, it
sure
is unbelievable. And they're putting an 8-lane track in, and they got a new press box. One thing they sent out earlier this week, new town policy that you cannot park your car on Elm Street until Friday at like 5 o'clock. So you can't keep your spot on Elm Street. If you guys, if you've ever watched a game at Brownstown, Elm Street is the street that runs behind the opponent's bleachers, and it is always a rowdy, rowdy place, and a lot of good food. You know, a lot of good food that's eaten out there. And if they're winning, they're you know, it seems to be a good place to be. But if you happen to get a couple points on them, what, look out! They're out there hooping and hollering. But what a great atmosphere, and you know, something for a small town like Brownstown, Indiana, and the way they rally around their sports and everything. It's a neat experience, and I got to spend a year over there coaching under Coach May when I was doing my student teaching. And you know, he's an amazing guy. All of his guys, you know, they still come up and ask how I'm doing, and that's just a classy program, and it's something that you know, we try to model ourselves after as well.
Yeah, sports is an interesting thing, and obviously we all know, you know, winning fixes a lot of problems, but what sports and their teams are able to do for that community is you know, second to none in a lot of ways. They travel well. I don't think I've ever seen a Brownstown game where they didn't pack their section of the gym,
right,
or the field, or the opposing team's field, whatever it may be. But sports is definitely a big deal over there, so they're always a fun team to play too.
Well, you can catch our local coaches Wednesday night, 8 p.m., Coach's Corner, live from McDonald's. So Bubba will be once again emceeing that evening. So you want to hear Philip, Luke, and RJ, tune in at 8 o'clock Wednesday night. I know a lot of people have been asking me, well, when do we get the local guys on? When do we get the local guys on? How come you're doing everybody else? But that's why, because we have a show called Coach's Corner, and we do it with the local guys at 8 p.m. Wednesday night. So make sure you turn into WSLM Wednesday night. So we're going to go ahead and, you know, it's the first week of high school football. We're going to go ahead. Derek and I are going to make our picks. George's not in the studio, so I'm going to make him make his picks so we can compare a tally as we go on through the season, who knows more about high school football. And we're going to start with the Mid-Southern Conference. If anybody wants to call in and give us your opinions what you want to pick for the week in the PLAC, please give us a call at the show. It's 812-883-3401. So if you don't like what we pick, or you have your own pick, please give us a call and let us know. We're going to start in the Mid-Southern Conference. So first game out of the gate, Derek, Salem versus North Harrison.
And I always hate picking your hometown, because you always sound like a homer or a hater, one of the two. But out of the gate, you know, North Harrison's one of those schools that they always seem to have talent one way or another. But coming out of the gate, first game of the year, I'm gonna go with my team. I'm gonna go hometown Lions on this one. I got Salem over the North Harrison Cougars.
Yeah, there's no way I'm picking against Salem. So you know, I'm gonna have Salem every week. So that's a kind of given. But yeah, I got a chance to watch some of the North Harrison West Washington scrimmage on a huddle this week, and I really feel like we're gonna take that game, and it's at home, our first home game. And you know, we were talking about it today a little bit, and you know, our first two games are, you know, North Harrison and Creek, and you know, the conference can be won and lost in the first 2 weeks, and so Coach Hartsfield's got the guys ready, and you know, North Harrison's lost some guys from last year, and even though they're the team to beat, you know, they're one of the top two teams in the conference coming back, and if we can pull this game out, it's going to be a huge victory for us, and really could set the tone for the entire right. year, you know. And I think I think our kids know it, and I look forward to Friday night. So get out and watch the game, support the kids, and if you can't get out, please tune in to WSLM. I'll be calling the game with Bubba on Friday night, so I'll be in the booth with him, and we'll be loud and proud inside the friendly confines of Paul A. Grace Field. So game two, the Clark County – or no, Clark County.
Clark County Showdown.
Yeah, you're right, yeah. Charlestown versus Silver Creek.
Two-thirds of the Clark County Showdown.
What do you got here?
Charlestown's a school. It's kind of like North Harrison. You know, they're a school you always feel like they have talent. You know, Coach made his interview alluded to them having, you know, again, a really good backfield. They always have athletes. Their skills players are always – they always seem to have guys that put up just huge numbers. But on the flip side of that, I also know what Silver Creek has.
Right.
And watching them play, and not only their guys on the basketball court, but also what they have on the football field. And I've got to go with Silver Creek on this one.
Yeah, me too. I'm going with Creek, and I think that it's just too much talent for Charlestown to overcome. And I think that, you know, Coach Dablo has really done a great job at Creek, and he is loaded with talent right now. And there's just, like you said, the kids are athletes in every sport, and they're fast. And I think that you know, he's got a three-year starter at quarterback. And so I'm going with Creek with that one. So that's second game in the Mid-Southern Conference. Game number three, the Washington County rival, East Washington versus West Washington. So we have a PLAC versus the MSC week one. Always a big game, the county rival. You know, West Washington starts with East Washington week one and ends with Salem on the final week. So it's an interesting schedule for West Washington. What do you think about this one?
I'm gonna go with the West Washington Senators on this one. I really like what they've got with that sophomore class and the, you know, the pieces they have to go with those guys out there. Right now, I think just right out of the gate, they're a little bit too much for Eastern. You know, so I'm gonna take the Senators.
Yeah, I really haven't heard a lot from the East Washington camp over the summer, and it's been really quiet. And I know Luke's working really hard down there, and you know, I think that they're gonna have things turned around. I think that the cohesiveness of this sophomore group that Coach Bowsman's got, and that's the thing. You know, I feel like this group, they're talented. They're really, you know, they're a really talented bunch. They are just sophomores. You know, there's a lot of sophomore skill position players, and I feel like you know, Holden starting at quarterback, Coach Bowsman's son starting at quarterback, and you know, I've played these guys all the way through in middle school, and you've coached against them in basketball, and I'm going with West Washington over East Washington. You know, I think that could possibly go either way, but I could also see West Washington turning it out
right.
too. So with a pretty high potent offense. So, and I watched, and they played real well against North Harrison and gave North Harrison, you know, everything they wanted in that scrimmage. So I'm going West Washington over East Washington as well. Game four.
Yeah, it brings us to game four here. The Brownstown Braves versus the Cordon Panthers. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I got a one of my best friends, you know, Coach Humphrey down at Cordon in his second year, and I know they've been working tremendously to get better, and you know, he kind of got a late start last year when he got the head job, and I think you know, that I know they're moving in the right direction, but I think you know, it's a tough battle week one, and I think Brownstown is just going to be too much for the Cordon Panthers.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that one. Just you know, Brownstown's a school that unless they're playing Salem, I'm not really going to bet against them. Just because they are skilled, they're disciplined, and it's a school that, again, I kind of always allude to the basketball side, but football and basketball both. They don't beat themselves at anything. You have to go out and beat Brownstown.
Right.
And I think, like you said, with the coaching situation last year and Coach Humphrey getting in there a little bit late, getting a late start and having to work on building talent with his first full summer here, surely will be improved. But again, I don't think they're in a position right now where they're able to go in and beat a Brownstown and a Coach May yet. So I'm going to take the Braves.
Yeah, and he alluded to that when he was here the other night, that they're going to be a young team and they're just going to continue to get better. And I think they're the team that people are not going to want to play at the end of the season, you know. And when you have a young group, and that's the same with West Washington. You know, West Washington is going to be young, and I think that they're just going to continue to get better as the season goes on too. So, but – you know, not too many people want to start. You know, a lot of people say, though, that if you're going to play Brownstown, you want to play them earlier than towards the end of the year.
That's fair.
When they really get that offense where it's just, you know, it's wheels in motion. So if you're gonna take a shot, trying to do it early in the season.
Well, the beauty with a young school, with a young team is might as well play the best out of the gate.
Right.
You know, you might as well play Brownstown out of the gate and see what you've got and build from there. And the beauty about freshmen is they become sophomores, and the beauty about sophomores is they become juniors.
Right, for sure. Well, that's the Mid-Southern Conference breakdown, and I feel like we all felt the same. We do have one more, don't we? Sorry.
Jumped again there a little bit.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. So we got one more. Clarksville versus Scottsburg.
Somebody be calling it all fired up if we skip this one.
Yeah, I know. Clarksville versus Scottsburg, to me, Clarksville's got a new coach. They really struggled last year. But to me, Scottsburg's the up-and-coming team that people need to look out for. They got a coach who used to coach at Ben Davis. He was an assistant at Ben Davis. Coach John Masson's helping him. He's a former head football coach at Charlestown High School. Scottsburg, it takes this one, I think, pretty easily. And I think the Scottsburg's a team that could, if you're not on your A game, could sneak up and maybe ruin someone's chance at the Mid-Southern Conference this year.
Yeah, Clarksville is kind of a school that sometimes you look at, maybe you downplay a little bit just because it seems to be, within the last couple of years, kind of a revolving door of football coaches and a revolving door of ADs, and they just hired a new AD, Levi Carmichael. Hopefully he can be a guy that comes in and wants to stay and wants to work and improve and get their programs back to where they used to be. I know when you were in school and I was in school, Clarksville was a team that always had athletes and competed.
Yeah, 1997 state runner-up. So.
And now they deal with, you know, you're losing kids to Jeff and New Albany, Providence, stuff like that. And now with the
– St. X, Trinity.
Yeah.
I mean,
the freedom to move to whatever school you want to has kind of plundered Clarksville a little bit. But I agree with you. I'm going Scottsburg on this one. I know they're relatively – young in terms of football. I know not dating back to the old days in the 60s, 70s, 80s when they had football, but getting into modern day football here, they're relatively young. And they roll right into a 4A sectional with Silver Creek. So they're obviously one of the bigger schools in the conference. So I'm going to go with the Warriors on this one just based off talent alone.
All right, so then there is our MSC picks. We got through them all. If anybody out there wants to debate or agree with us, we'd rather you agree with us. But if you think they were wrong in some of our picks, 883-3401 is the number. Give us a call. Don't be afraid to tell us what your picks are. I know a lot of people want to. It's hard to make that pick. You know, I may get a call from Coach Humphrey saying, "What do you mean you didn't pick me week one?" So, but if you want to tell us why you think we're right or wrong, you know, give us a call 883-3401. The line is open. So we're going to move on to the PLAC now. We've already got one, West Washington, East Washington. We've already picked that for the PLAC, but we'll go with Paoli versus Madison. And we saw a little bit of Madison Friday night in our scrimmage up here.
Yep.
Paoli had an excellent season last season under Coach Lowry in his first year, and this is an interesting game here.
Yeah, I was able to talk to Coach Lowry a couple times over the course of the summer, kind of pick his brain a little bit, and then he started throwing out terminology and words that I really wasn't quite comprehending, but then he broke it down for me a little bit, so it was more on my level, the football terminology for me, so I could understand it, and the things he wants to do over there and what he's doing and what he's working with. You know, told me that he specifically works with the offensive line.
Right.
You know, he's not the head coach that's the defensive coordinator,
right,
or the head coach that wants to be the offensive coordinator, stuff like that. He takes, you know, the least glamorous position.
Right.
And like you said, I it's because I think that's our most important position is our offensive line, and he wants them to understand that and have their offensive lineman take some ownership in that. And that really kind of stood out to me. But I think between the two, I'm going to go with talent again. And based off what they did last year, I'm going to take Paoli.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. This Madison's 4A.
Yeah.
And Paoli's 2A. So you're talking twice the kids in the school corporation. And, you know, Madison looks really looked pretty good against us Friday night and gave us some fits early on. But I really, you know, I've coached with Coach Lowry for a long time. And you're right. I mean, there's no one around here that can sit and talk football for hours like that guy can. And he loves to talk about it. And if there's a whiteboard around, look out. The guy will go through three or four markers in one setting. So, but you know, I'm a big fan of Coach Lowry, and I think it's a big win week one for Paoli as they knock off the 4A Madison.
Right, that'd be a big win for Paoli, and that rolls us right into Springs Valley and Eastern Green.
Yeah, this one's toss up.
What do you think, BT?
I don't know. I know Eastern Green had a tremendous season last year, sectional champs, went on, you know, in the tournament, and you know, I don't know how much they lost. I know they had a lot of seniors on that team. Valley is the up-and-coming team, I think, in the PLAC. They've had some talented young teams come through. So it's hard for me, not knowing what Eastern Green have, but based solely on what Eastern Green did last year, I'm going to go with Eastern Green over Valley.
Okay.
I switched my pick, by the way.
You did switch. Yeah. You switched the pick, like mid-show.
I thought myself out of it. Yeah, I thought myself out of it.
Wondered why you were writing things over
there. I'm not getting any deals now at the French Lick or anything. I'm banned, but I'm going to go with Eastern Green.
That's fine, because I was going to go the other way. Well, I was going to go the other way on you.
Okay.
You know, going with Valley being the up-and-comer, like you said, and them coming off a sectional championship in basketball last year. I know at this level, typically, your athletes carry over from one sport to the next. And Valley seems right now to have the athletes. So I'm going to go Springs Valley over Eastern Green week one.
So you got three PLAC teams winning in the first week. I like that. The next one, and that's the thing. I was really tossed up with Valley because I do think that they have talent there. You know, and Valley was loaded in the early 90s, late 80s. You know, they made a run at the state championship as well. And I think that, you know, they have a rich tradition. Eastern Green doesn't. You know, last year was Eastern Green's most successful season, and it's just going to come down to who probably wants it more and maybe who has the ball last in the fourth quarter.
Right.
So we're going to move on to Mitchell versus Edgewood. Mitchell, another team that had a good season last year, that was headed in the right direction. I know our juniors lost to Mitchell as eighth graders, one of the only games we lost that year. And so I know there's talent in Mitchell in that junior class specifically, but I still feel like Edgewood's going to pull this out. So I'm going to go with Edgewood over Mitchell.
Do you know where the game is being played?
No.
That was going to be my big determining factor there.
I think Mitchell.
Okay. In that case, I'm going to take Mitchell because they're a team I've heard some people talk about so far this preseason coming in, you know, what they've got coming up, the kids they've got, like you alluded, you know, like you said, were able to beat our junior class when they were middle school, which was a pretty solid group. And, you know, if it's a home game for Mitchell, I'm going to take the Blue Jackets over Edgewood.
So you're gonna switch that one on me?
Yeah,
I think you may be a closet PLAC fan.
I gotta be a little different.
I mean, you got every pick so far is the PLAC. So I don't know. You may be hanging with George too much. He's a big PLAC fan. So Jamie Richardson just sent me a message. Jamie says Mitchell by 14.
Jamie knows
two
what's
touchdowns,
up.
And I'm, you know,
hey, Jamie, that's a good pick right there.
So you know, he might, you know, he's a connoisseur of high school football and fine dining. That's, you know, so I think, you know, Jamie says two scores, Mitchell over Edgewood. So I got two guys against me right now. So maybe he likes all my picks, but that one, so I'll go with that. So Jamie says two scores, Mitchell over Edgewood.
Yeah.
All right, the final one. Perry Central versus Tell City. Perry Central used to dominate the PLAC, you know, won every year, year after year after year, but had struggled, and now they're bouncing back. Tell City 2-8 last season. I'm going to pick the Perry Central Commodores.
Yeah, I hate to jump back on the same team train as you right now, but yeah, Tell City being 2-8 last year, Perry Central kind of is getting, you know, they're rewriting the ship a little bit with their program, so I'm going to take Perry Central as well.
All right, so there you have it. Those are our picks for the upcoming first week of IHSAA football action. We've been waiting a long time for this to start, and what a great week. And, you know, there's something about football season. I know you're a basketball guy, so bear with me here. But there's something about football season, especially around Salem and Washington County. You know, just hearing people talk about it.
I can still like football too.
I know it's you okay. can. I know you can. But I didn't want to. I'm not trying to put basketball down. But I'm just saying, you know, there's something about it. And it's Friday nights, and you know, it's a special time around here. And you know, no matter how good a team is, people in Washington County come out for their teams. And yeah, that's
for me. This is always kind of the. I know we tend to start school a lot earlier than what we used to. And I know talking to you with having Braylon, they started school even earlier than we did. But, you know, the 1st of August is the official start of school. But for me, football season, that first Friday night was always kind of the unofficial school's in session. Now Right. We're ready to go. School year's underway. And Right. Kind of it got things going. So.
Yeah, and, you know, we play Thursday night. We play North Harrison at home. The middle school guys do. And so we'd love to have you out and watch us play. We took one on the chin a little bit down at Floyd Central this weekend. We got beat by Christian Academy out of Louisville, 28-6. We're looking to bounce back ourselves Thursday night for our first home game. So come out and watch us Thursday night. We play North Harrison, then the Lions play North Harrison on Friday night at home as well. You know, if you get a chance to come watch, if not, listen to it on WSLM. And I'm going to post our picks on our Facebook page, and we would love to see you guys. If you don't want to call in, we'd like to see your picks as well, just see how well we did against maybe some of you football experts out there. I'm sure Jamie will probably dominate this contest. But so give us a shout there at on Facebook and let us know what you're thinking about. So
absolutely.
Anything else, Derek, tonight you want to add?
I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
Well, we got about five minutes
left. We've covered
so,
quite a bit in the last 55 minutes.
Right. So after following us tonight, Reds on 97.9 FM, Delilah, one of my favorite shows always, right, Delilah, 12:20 a.m. Are you a fan of Delilah, Derek?
Always.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, from way back.
You got to. Oh, we totally
– long-time listener, first-time caller.
Hey, we totally forgot this. We've had the top the question of the week. Jamie just sent a thing in. What about the top three receivers? We haven't done that. So
thanks, Jamie.
Man, we
somebody's got to keep Blair accountable around here.
Yeah, you know, it's usually George that always yells at me that we got to remind him. So let's get that in real quick before we go off the air. Top three receivers. I'm gonna let you start, Derek, and top three receivers in Washington County.
You want to alternate this? You just want to do?
We'll go all three.
Ones and two. Okay, we're going all three.
All three.
All right, number three. I'm sticking with mostly guys I played with just because I can't remember. You know, a ways back in terms of our county football, what we've got. So it's going to be fairly recent guys here. So don't knock me for that. They're out there in listener land here. Number three for me.
Trying to say that I'm old and you're young.
I'm just saying you've seen more guys than
I have.
I'm
with you. Okay.
Number three for me is Terry Griffiths, guy I played with. Had he played all 4 years of football in high school, I think he probably would have. I don't know that Brishaber wouldn't have broken his records, but I think they definitely would have been a lot more harder to catch. Would have taken Evan probably a little bit longer. Maybe would have a few more balls come his way. But before Evan came along, Terry had most of the records, you know, right. Receptions for a season, season yardage, all that kind of stuff. So, and he did it at being 5'9", 145-150 right. pounds, you know, soaking
and no
wet,
knees.
Soaking wet with
no
a lead
knees.
Vest on
no
and
knees.
A kneecap that would slip out at the drop of a dime.
Right.
So, you know, and the ankles of a 40-year-old. So I'm going to go. My number three is Terry Griffiths.
So that's all – you have all three of them?
Yeah. Griffiths, and Griffiths. Sorry.
That's all three.
I thought you were giving me your number three. Number two for me is going to be also a – a guy that I went to school with, was in my class, was on the opposite side of the field as Terry, and that's Travis Missamore. Was a guy I wish I could have seen get a few more deep balls, but was a great route runner, was more of the physical wide receiver, was a good blocker, holds the school record for catches in a game at North Harrison down at their place, and was just a workaholic, a workhorse, and turned out to be a pretty good wide receiver for Salem. So that's my number two. And then number one, I don't think probably either of us are going to have any issue debating this one or agreeing on this one. My number one is Evan Brischeber.
Yeah, that pretty much everything that Evan was able to do in the last few seasons, Indiana All-Star, we don't have – we've only had three of those in school history, and what he was able to do and his height, his speed – he's definitely on my list as well. I want to run down the couple of guys that have sent theirs in. Jamie said Travis Elliott, Evan Brischeber, and Tommy Weeks were his top three.
Okay.
Josh Green, Ben Morrow from West Washington, Trevor Nice from West Washington, and he had Evan on his list as well. And Morgan Conrad, he put Ben Morrow on his as well. So that looks like two Senators are really big fans of what Ben did out there. Ronnie Reagans. And Evan Brischeber. So Brischeber made all three of those lists as well. For me, I'm going with Travis Elliott. Probably would be my number one, or number, well, one or 1A. Him and Brischeber, I guess, the same. And Evan would be number two. And then a guy that probably doesn't get the recognition that I think he deserves at Salem, because he played some running back as well, was Jared Hammack. Jared Hammack,
he was a really good athlete.
Jared, to me, was one of the best. He had some of the best hands of a receiver that I've seen. And I think that had he played receiver, him and Blair Huff were connected for a lot of touchdowns back in the day. And so I'm going to go with Jared Hammack as my number three. It's funny because, Travis and those guys and Jamie and those guys were – I was young when they were playing, so that was kind of like my guys I looked up to. And always when I played youth football, I'd spray all this stickum on my gloves like Travis did, and I'd get it in my eyes, and it's burned the whole game. I couldn't see anything. So no one threw me the ball. Like, they don't throw the little short.
You guys ran a lot.
They don't throw the short fat kid the ball.
Ran a lot of spread offense in the park and rec.
Yeah, I wanted them to. I look good, but I had gloves. But they never wanted. Okay. They threw it to me. I can stick my hand up though. And I'm sure I'd catch it. But so there you go. Those are our receivers. Our top three receivers for Washington County. We're going with the big boys next week. The top three offensive linemen, the guys who never get the credit, they're going to get some credit this week. So look for that coming up on Facebook tomorrow night. Let us know who your offense. Hopefully some of these running backs and quarterbacks will give some of these guys some love. They get their name. Let's give your guys some love that block for you. So we're closing it out. Thanks for joining us. We'll be here next week, same time. So
keep
give us
listening.
A call.
Check out the podcast.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Kentuckiana Sports Talk on WSLM, 1220 AM and 97.9 FM. Join us next week for more sports talk about local, regional, and national sports. Be sure to call in on the KST Talk Line at 812-883-3401. And between now and then, tweet your comments and questions to KY in Sports Talk or post them on our Facebook page at Kentuckiana Sports Talk. We'll have a question of the week, polls for you, and all the latest news and interviews with local and regional players and coaches. Join George and Blair next week on Kentuckiana Sports Talk.